Okay, and our final presenter is Mary Lucier. And Mary, I actually realize I don't, oh yes, I do have a biography on you. She has 25 years of experience as a newborn critical care nurse and 15 years experience as a NICU lactation consultant. She's the director of lactation services at the Connecticut Children's Medical Center, and she's the coordinator of the Connecticut Human Milk Research Center and chair of the Donor Human Milk Steering Committee. Mary is a consultant working with hospitals on the East Coast to develop donor human milk policies and is presently conducting research regarding donor human milk and very low birth weight infants.
Thank you very much. I'm really excited to be here today for this very well-rounded session on breastfeeding in the NICU. I'm going to be the back end and talk about the receiving part of this whole process. And that is for the very small, fragile babies, and I have nothing to disclose, the small, fragile babies that we've been talking about today that I've spent pretty much my whole career working with and helping to get human milk. We talked already about the benefits of human milk for this population. They're very well documented, and thanks to some really tremendous research that's happened over, you know, these last 20 years of my career now, this is not something that we debate anymore. The neonatologists, the lactation consultants, the NICU nurses, we talk to the moms if we know they're going to deliver preterm. We talk to them, you know, when they're on labor and delivery. If it's an unexpected birth, we go up there right away. We don't mince words. We call it medicine. We say we need your milk. This isn't really an option. We want you to do this for your baby. We are very clear to tell the moms that we don't expect this to necessarily be a very long-term commitment, but at least to get started. We need their milk initially. And I have to say, I've really seen, you know, a change in our neonatologists over the years and how they talk to moms, and really making the point very, very clear. We have very, very few moms that say no. But, you know, as Brianna talked about, you know, providing milk for these babies is not easy. There's a lot of time and commitment during a very stressful time, and so it is just not always an option for them to be able to provide all the milk that their babies need over, you know, the entire length of stay of their hospitalization, and that's where donor human milk comes into play. So, of course, our choice is always mother's own milk, always, and we do as much as we possibly can in my hospital to make sure that mothers provide milk for their babies and as much as they can. If we use donor milk, our hope is that it's a bridge. It's just that amount of milk that we need to either start feedings on our infants. We have a feeding protocol. We're fairly aggressive, I would say, if you compared our feeding protocol to, you know, nationally. We feed our very low birth weight infants within 48 hours, unless, you know, we have certain criteria where they can't be fed. But that number is going down. Every year, that number is going down. There are units that are feeding these babies within 12 hours. So, you know, it's putting the pressure on the NICU lactation consultants, I can tell you, because the need to get milk from these mothers faster and faster is happening. We're presently doing a study right now in my NICU looking at hand expression of mothers of very low birth weight infants because, you know, the pump just doesn't always do it, especially in those first days. And, you know, but I can tell you as the PI of the study and the person who has to get up there within a few hours of birth, that trying to hand express a mother who's just delivered a very small sick baby who is on MAG and sick herself and just had a C-section, it's the challenges are great. So I can tell you that, you know, using donor milk for these babies has, you know, has been such a wonderful opportunity for us to avoid formula exposure in these babies now that we're feeding them so early. But when you talk about donor milk in my hospital and where it started, I've got to tell you where this really began for us. This was about 15 years ago, so well before donor milk feeding was, you know, right now about 50% of the NICUs are using donor milk in the United States, so long before that was even close to being the norm. We had a baby that was born. This is Shelly, and her mom was found on the floor in the kitchen in her house. She had had an aneurysm. She was life-starred to our hospital, and she was kept alive just long enough to be able to C-section Shelly. And, you know, the dad was somebody that was just obviously devastated. He had just lost his wife. And he stayed 24/7 by her bedside, never left. And to tell you that we adopted him, you know, the NICU nurses, would be an understatement. We just loved this guy, and, you know, he really stole our hearts. And so when it came time to feed Shelly, now this was 15 years ago, we didn't feed quite so quickly, but when we did, he said to us, you know, my mom, Shelly's mom, really wanted to breastfeed. It was very, very important to her. And so my sister-in-law is breastfeeding. Can I use her milk, please? And, you know, we said, well, you know, we can't use direct donation like that, but there is something called a milk bank, and you can order donor milk, and it's screened and pasteurized, and, you know, we could maybe do that. Now, I say this with, you know, I'm a NICU nurse. I've been a NICU nurse for 25 years, so I can talk about NICU nurses. We don't like to be told what to do. We don't like change, and we would not have been okay with donor milk 15 years ago in my unit. However, people just loved this guy, and so they came up to me and they said, Mary, John wants donor milk. You need to get him donor milk. So I said, okay, that's not a problem. I'll do that. So we got donor milk, and this is how it started in our unit, was getting donor milk for Shelly. And it took us, as you'll see, another 10 years to get an official donor milk program in my unit. However, I think it helped to just bring it, you know, once we started, every year we'd have a few, and it really kind of got the ball rolling for us. And I'm happy to tell you that Shelly is a beautiful, healthy 15-year-old girl who was the bridesmaid at her dad's wedding this summer. Yep. So, fast forward 10 years. On August 1st of 2010, Connecticut Children's Medical Center Hartford campus officially adopted our policy of donor milk as the first alternative if mother's own milk is not available in sufficient quantities. Our inclusion criteria is that our infants need to be less than or equal to 1,800 grams or less than or equal to 32 weeks gestation. We feed our donor milk for up to 10 weeks or until our babies achieve 50% full oral feeding. So that's not enteral, that's oral. And we do obtain consent for all of our babies to receive donor milk. So we started collecting data right after, because we knew that we wanted to be able to look at, you know, what was happening in terms of our donor milk receipt and our babies. And so the first thing we decided to look at really was how it affected their diet. We didn't know who was going to say yes or no to this. We didn't really know what was going to happen. So we took a step back and looked at how it affected the diet of these babies. Our hypothesis was that there would be an increase in human milk feedings and a decrease in formula feedings in this population after we established our program. We also wanted to compare costs between times. We had three study periods. Our pre-donor milk period was a six-month period prior to the establishment of our program, so donor milk was not our standard of care at that point. And then donor milk year one and year two are the 2 years after establishing our program. Now, one thing I need to tell you that's important when you're looking at data with donor milk is about fortifiers. So we use cow's milk-based human milk fortifiers in my NICU, meaning, you know, they're formula fortifiers. So when you're comparing data that's looking especially at neck rates, because of the important study that came out from Sandra Sullivan, where they looked at the, you know, fabulous results with surgical neck rates decreasing by 90% in an all-human milk diet, it's really important to understand that they used a human milk-based human milk fortifier. They did not use formula cow's milk-based fortifiers. So that's a little bit apples and oranges if you're comparing data on neck in units who are using or not using the human milk-based human milk fortifier. So I just wanted to mention that. Our data was collected prospectively for all inborn very low birth weight NICU admissions that were hospitalized for at least 28 days. We collected data on maternal and infant demographics, enteral feeding initiation, volume and type of enteral feeding for the first 28 days of life, so we literally documented every ml that they received for the first 28 days of life, the number of parental nutrition days, and then the actual donor milk costs per study period. Our setting is our 32-bed inner city level 4 NICU, where we average about 70 very low birth weight inborn admissions. We analyzed our data using chi-square, Mann Whitney U, and Kruskal-Wallis. So if you look at our study cohort, the one thing that is really worth mentioning is that our gestational age was had a statistically significant difference in being more preterm in our pre-donor milk group. There was no statistical difference in private gravida, maternal age, gender or birth weight. We use, in our studies, we use CPAP days and ventilator days as our proxy for illness severity. There was no differences there. And again, we did not see a, we did see a decrease in our neck, but it was not a statistically significant decrease. We'd need a much higher study cohort number to see that. First, we looked at exposure. So this graph represents the percentage of infants who were exposed to either formula, mother's own milk, or donor milk. We had a statistically significant decrease in the proportion of infants who were exposed to formula after starting our donor milk program. Our exposure to mother's own milk was not changed, and we had a statistically significant increase in the proportion of infants who were exposed to donor milk. Now, as I had mentioned to you before, we did use it kind of on a case-by-case here and there, so that's why that first number is 4 and not 0, but that is representative of using it as our standard of care. So next we turned our thoughts to looking at exclusivity. So we wanted to look at the proportion of infants who received an exclusive diet of either human milk, which would be mother's own and or donor, just mother's own and formula. So the black line represents the proportion of infants who received an exclusive diet of human milk, which increased, had a statistically significant increase. And this next one is a really important one, and that's because when we were looking at starting a donor milk program, there were people in the room who had some pretty serious concerns that our receipt of mother's own milk would go down after we started a donor milk program. The thought being that perhaps mothers would be less motivated to put all that hard work into pumping that Brianna just talked to you about if they knew there was an alternative. Like, why do I have to do all this? Why have to get up 8 times a day and pump and do all this if you have something that'll help my baby? And so people were concerned that mother's own milk receipt would actually go down. Our results showed the opposite. We had a statistically significant increase in the proportion of infants who received an exclusive diet of their mother's own milk after we started our donor milk program. So we were extremely happy with these results. And, you know, this is kind of what I thought was going to happen, and that's what I said at those meetings, and I thank God that's what really happened, because I was banking on this. But, you know, my thought was just that if you tell somebody, you know, human milk is so important that if we don't use yours, we're going to use somebody else's, the message is very powerful, and I think that's exactly what happened. And we did see a decrease in, we have such a high rate of mother's own milk in our unit that, you know, our exclusive formula feeders were such a small group. It did go down, but it didn't reach statistical significance. Next, we looked at the proportion of enteral intake, so how much of what they got was each type of feeding. We saw a statistically significant increase in the proportion of feeding that they got that was human milk. Our change in the amount of milk that they got that was their own mother's didn't change much. We did see a statistically significant increase in the amount of milk that they got that was donor. Again, there's such a high receipt of mother's own. That's why those numbers are lower, and a statistically significant decrease in the amount of formula that these babies received, because prior to the program, that would have been their supplement to mother's own, and after the donor milk program, most of them were getting donor milk. So next we wanted to look at days of parenteral nutrition, and this was another really important piece of our study. Those bars represent the interquartile ranges, and the black bars in the middle of the medians. And what we saw was a statistically significant decrease in the number of days on parenteral nutrition. And in fact, there was an average number of 9 fewer days on parenteral nutrition after our donor milk program for these babies. And that's a pretty important result that we were not actually expecting, to be quite honest with you. So these babies were getting to full feeds an average of 9 days faster. That is really important clinically. These babies are getting off their central lines faster, so your central line sepsis rates will go down. And, you know, honestly, it's so important, because we had not really ever in my career fed babies this small full enteral feedings before. So we had a pretty big, you know, learning curve in terms of these babies. We had a pretty high rate of late onset metabolic acidosis for a while, because we were just figuring out how to fully feed babies with kidneys that are this preterm. We've gotten better at it, but this was just an unexpected but really, really great result from our study. And just to let you know, because as I mentioned when I showed you the cohort, we did have a statistically significant difference in gestational age between the pre and post. We did a multi-variable regression analysis to look at gestational age to see if it was a factor in terms of that parental nutrition days, and it was not. We looked at cost. Our overall budget was $36,000 annually. We actually spent a little over $25,000 for year one and a little under $18,000 for year two. If you calculate that to the cost per eligible infant, so this is not what we spent per baby, but what we would have spent per baby that was eligible to receive donor milk, it came out to $190 per baby. And I'd like to thank Brianna for setting me up so perfectly with her neck rates there in terms of cost, because I couldn't have asked for better there. But if you think about that kind of money, and in surgical neck, you're talking about almost $200,000 for a case of surgical neck that it cost the hospital. So I can honestly and very happily tell you that the discussion about cost is off the table. We don't even talk about that anymore. Next, what we just wanted to do was look at weight gain, because if the world of neonatology right now and donor human milk feedings, that is what everybody's talking about. Can these babies gain weight on donor milk? And so what we did was change the way we looked at our infants. Rather than pre and post donor milk program, we looked at exposure and divided it into infants who were exposed to donor human milk and those who were not. And our results doing it that way showed that the donor human milk babies were fed 9 hours earlier. So they were fed earlier than the babies who were not fed donor milk. And in a multivariable analysis, the donor milk babies and the non-donor milk babies did not differ in weight gain. Again, we did an adjusted analysis for birth weight, chronological age, total enteral intake, parental nutrition in the first 28 days, and illness severity using mechanical ventilation and CPAP as our proxy, and there were no differences. So we were really happy with these results because that is pretty much the buzz about donor milk that we're constantly fighting against, that, you know, you can't grow babies on donor milk, and our study shows that that's just not true. There are some limitations, of course. These are comparison to historic controls. This is not a randomized control trial. This was a single center study in our level 4 NICU, so you know, whether this is generalizable to other NICUs, I cannot say. And in terms of cost, remember, our infants, we go up to 1,800 grams in terms of our inclusion criteria. Many NICUs are 1,500 grams. Some are under 1,000 grams. So our cost is only generalizable to our particular inclusion criteria. Again, our baseline rate of mother's milk receipt is very high in our NICU, so that may have affected the power to detect some of the differences. And our TPN days are aggregate data. We're not individualized. So just to conclude, establishing our donor milk program in our NICU was associated with some significant changes in very low birth weight infant diet. We saw a decrease in exposure to formula, a decrease in the proportion of enteral intake as formula, an increase in exposure to human milk, an increase in the proportion of enteral intake as human milk, and an increase in the proportion of infants that were fed an exclusive human milk diet. We also saw no decrease in exposure to mother's own milk or mother's own milk as a proportion of enteral intake, and we did see an increase in the proportion of infants fed an exclusive diet of their mother's own milk. We saw an associated decrease in parental nutrition days. The cost was absolutely not prohibitive, and we saw no difference in weight gain between infants exposed to donor milk and infants who were not exposed to donor milk. I'd like to acknowledge my co-investigators, and any questions?
Home to the hospital from the
hospital.
I said, when you get an incubator, you hit the jack.
Right. Well, we have, well, first of all, I guess I'll say, you know, an 85% Medicaid rate, and we don't get reimbursed, you know, at the for those infants that we would get, the rate we would get reimbursed from private insurances. So as a freestanding children's hospital, we're not making money on many of those babies. You know, what we, and it's a really good question, and every time I talk about this, I have people, especially at national conferences, there are people from all over the country talking to me about different ways that donor milk is purchased in their NICU. I had a mom, I was at NAN a few weeks ago, and a nurse told me that in their unit, they actually add up the number of ounces the baby takes, and they charge the parents for that amount of milk. I couldn't believe that. I didn't even know you could do that. But, you know, we just... That is just included in our NICU budget. When we every year sit down to look at how much money we need to run our NICU, that $36,000 number is just put in there, and that's an operational budget number. So is money put in for TPN. We spent more in saved more in TPN than we spent in donor milk. So I don't know if that answers your question, but
it.
Right. Right. Which is what my hospital does. It is. It is up there. It's just hard because we just get a lump sum per baby, so we don't, and it's not broken down. So that's why it's so hard to say, because they're not saying we're going to give you X amount for parental nutrition, and we're going to give you, you know, so we get a lump sum. So that would be difficult to tease out, but I mean, I'm sure it'd be done.